Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Science Fiction Roleplay. For more information and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com.
Please start the show.
Geeks On.
Welcome, everybody.
Hello, my geeklings.
It's another episode of Geeks On.
Hello,
Geeks
my On. Geeklings.
Matt.
Ooh. Yes.
Who are you?
I am Matt King, and I am an actor here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
My name is Donald Marshall. I am a writer and a video game professional here in Hollywood, California, and I, too, am a geek.
Hi, my name is Aaron Hendricks. I almost said video game professional. I'm a screen...
wannabe.
I'm not a screenwriter, either. I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
Hi, my name is Pete Robinson, and I am a Matthew King clone. I will sound exactly like him the whole episode, and I'm a geek.
Although, so now that you've got the whole, like, Cletus front tooth going.
Yes, exactly. You can actually whistle through it.
Say, sonny.
Guess what I think you do, Shane? Hey.
Peter had a small accident with a marble he was sucking on. We don't know why he was sucking on the marble. Through a garden hose or something like that.
Something like that.
And so then, front tooth is gone.
Yeah, actually, I am missing one of my two front teeth right now. I've got a very redneck look.
Which is odd because we're writing a horror film called Teeth.
That's true.
It's true.
You probably are probably technically the least redneck of all four of us, though.
He's from Florida. I am from Florida.
Not originally.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
I was born and raised.
Okay, wow, so you really are the most redneck.
He's the most redneck by far.
Wow.
Out in the swamps, eating gator, you know. Conch sandwiches, man. You know.
Conch sandwiches.
Fried conch sandwich, man.
Because I misheard that.
I've never had that in my life. I'm curious.
You misheard that? Great.
I misheard you
saying. Have you had boiled peanuts?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Wait a second. Conch sandwiches and boiled peanuts?
Yeah, they sell them inside.
No, I've heard of boiled peanuts, but we don't do that up east.
They sell them inside of the road.
This is rife for mishearing.
On the way to the airport.
Peanuts. Peanuts.
Conchs.
I love conch. I love conch and peanuts.
Alrighty. Did anybody have a good geek week?
I had the weirdest geek week in the entire world. First of all, I'm utterly annoyed with Oblivion. I've been lost in Oblivion and playing it.
Every time I log on to my 360, there's Matt on Oblivion.
Yeah.
But the thing is...
During Aaron's party, Matt was on Oblivion.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
Matt went back to bring the dog back to the house and play Oblivion.
The dog was afraid of the fireworks and Kat made me stay at home with him. Anyway, so I'm playing Oblivion. But the thing is, I had leveled up my alchemy skill over and over and over and over and over again. So suddenly I found when I went to sleep for the first time that my character went from level 1... to like level 14, because every time you level a major skill, it levels your character.
Interesting.
And so now I'm screwed because I can't, because I had to go back because like my character only has gear for like a level 2 character, but I'm fighting against level 14 characters.
Something similar happened to me the very first time I played, like, and now I'm like level 7 and I'm like nearly as far as I was when my original game got wiped out.
Well, I mean, my thing is, like, I walk around, and every townsperson I pass by goes, hey, can I have some potions? Could you make us some potions? But, I mean, it's, like, everybody knows I'm this famous alchemist, but that's the only thing that I can do.
Maybe you could set up a store in the basement of a tavern somewhere?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Oh, right, it's not an MMORPG.
Right, yes.
Oh,
come on.
You
gotta get over this WoW thing. Problem you've got comparing every single game.
You can't
to WoW.
Do that in WoW either.
I didn't compare it to WoW. I compared it to MMORPGs.
And what other MMO RPG do you play?
Star Wars does that.
Star Wars does that.
All right.
Thank you, Peter.
Ultima
backing me up.
Did that in the day, right?
People are still playing Ultima Online. That's correct.
Are they
I'm
really?
About you?
Hell, people are still playing Final Fantasy XI.
Are you playing WoW still?
That's
a yes.
I played the 5th.
That's a yes.
You're
really?
Totally playing WoW still.
I played the 5th.
What's your
you
character?
Went back because of the damn ass, the crack that they
it
sent in the
free.
Mail.
It was free.
They
damn
sent you.
You
crack in the mail.
How
and
am
you
I supposed
bought
to say no?
You addictive personality.
It's free.
Oh,
so wait, what
Don,
character are you
no.
playing?
I made a blood elf.
Blood elf.
Oh, God.
I just wanted to play the new area, but now a bunch of people I know are playing, so I'm actually playing with people. It's nice.
Are the blood elves as uber as they're supposed to be?
No.
Okay. I saw Die Hard as well. I saw Die Hard. Which was, strangely, the interesting that now he's the Terminator.
Yeah, I felt the same way. It's Die Hard as if every character had been replaced by Terminator units.
Yeah.
Including the bad guys.
That Asian chick...
was a Terminator.
Yeah, it was a Terminator.
Yeah.
Have you seen this, Peter?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But don't blow it too much.
It just pissed me off.
It's still a pretty good movie.
He knocks her through eight walls and an elevator shaft, and then they fight.
Yeah, it's...
with a Chevy truck.
Yeah, hits her at
40... She's a Terminator.
Hits her at 40 miles per hour.
He hits her faster than 40 miles per hour, because I guarantee you it takes more than 40 miles per hour to get through a wall and seven other walls.
Yeah, she was the Terminator. But it was fun. Fun movie. But yeah, I saw the Transformers.
Oh, you did?
What'd
you
mean? I haven't seen it yet.
I thought it was fun. It was fun.
It was pretty.
Some good special effects.
But otherwise, yeah.
We should have a Transformer show. Maybe.
You're one of the few people that gave it a thumbs up that I've talked to.
I don't think
Aaron ever actually gives thumbs up.
He gave it a thumbs three-quarters up.
He got a thumb slightly raised.
But see, a thumb slightly erect.
Okay.
I wasn't into the toys and all that. So I was like, you know, I wasn't going to see the movie anyway.
I'm going to just swallow the bitter pill and do a doubleheader of Fantastic Four and the Transformers.
Oh, God.
See, I'm not giving
Fantastic Four any more of my money.
I'm hearing much better reviews for Fantastic Four 2 than... Okay, it's not hard to get better reviews than Fantastic Four 1.
No, yes. You just have to, like, crap on a piece of film and then project it, and that would give a better movie than...
In fact, I have one here. Look at this. Hey, that's better than me.
My God.
Fantastic Four.
It's like a Rorschach test.
I have nothing to say to that.
Wow.
I'm stunned.
Anyway.
I got something to talk about.
All right.
How about the new iPhone?
I do not own. No one here owns it, but we have played with it.
Did you see my? Did you see my poll on the Geekzone website?
No. Yeah. What is your poll?
I have posted a poll on the Geekzone website as to when Aaron, our early adopter, will get an iPhone.
Well, why are you pointing at me? Because Peter's already. He's counting down whether you're debating whether you're going to get within 6 months or a year.
Because you
already have the plan.
Well, here's the thing. This is what it comes. This is. Well, let's talk about the iPhone first, then we'll talk about some of the other issues. But first of all, I mean, it does look great.
And it actually lived up to the hype, according to a lot of the responses.
And the overall response is that it is a superior product, but only an okay phone. In other words, that the phone quality is not like the most amazing phone quality.
Yeah, welcome to cell phones.
That it's fine, but it's not like amazing in terms of the sound quality.
It might also be that we're in Los Angeles.
But, well, you
know. That's been kind of a review.
I read a couple of reviews and they all said the same thing.
Who sent me that video of that woman? Aaron, you sent me that video of the crazy woman who...
Oh, tried to buy herself.
Tried to buy out the store. She brought $100,000. To the Apple store.
She didn't bring that. She brought like $18,000.
$18,000? Okay, I don't know.
And she bought her way into the
first place in line.
She paid a guy like $800 to get in the front
to get his after he'd been there for days. And she's going to buy up the entire store. And she gets in the door and they say... You can buy one. Sorry. That's it.
She buys one that she's now paid... $1,300 for it because she had to pay it. And then that guy just gets into the back of the line. They had enough phones to go around. He then gets his phone for free plus $200.
Wow.
But yeah. Peter and I, did you guys play with it?
No.
It works. After I played it with at the Apple store, I felt like I was playing a science fiction movie prop because it works so well and so smoothly, like the interface, that I thought that like... they were just projecting some video,
right?
Like some Star Trek video, and it like this doesn't really work this way. It's like fake video,
right?
It works that well, and so really, at first I was like, I'm not going to get the iPhone until like way later because I just had no desire, and
right.
I actually won't get it for way later. But I have to say, playing with the phone is the best selling point for the iPhone because when you touch it. And you zoom through the pictures and the music and all that, you really want the damn phone.
Call me a Neil Luddite. I'm watching people play with their thing, and I don't get it.
Don't watch it.
I don't get the appeal.
Touch it. I'm saying watching it's one thing. I saw all the videos. It's like, yeah, cool. get your hands on it, and you're like, you're gonna.
You don't get the appeal. What don't you get about the appeal?
There's nothing I need that for $600 on a phone that I can't just wait to get to a computer to do. You know, I don't need that crap.
Yeah, but you don't. You know? You're not a tech guy. Period.
No, I'm not.
I mean, you don't have a TiVo.
But I think a lot of those...
I have a DVR.
I know. You guys are cavemen.
I have a DVR.
You do?
I have DVR. Thank you.
Since when did you get that?
Like a week ago. Oh. But I have it.
I don't have a TiVo specifically because I don't need any more reason to be more addicted to television than I already am.
That's what everybody says, Matt. Yeah. Everybody, that's the exact same excuse everybody has before they get a TiVo because they don't know what a TiVo is.
Have you not seen me be addicted to television?
I got to say, with my DVR stuff, I watch more shows, but I spend less time watching TV.
Exactly.
Because I can just watch it whenever the hell I want, and I skip all the commercials. And you'd be amazed. I can't watch TV with commercials anymore. I can't do it.
I watch less television now than I ever have before. And I watch exactly what I want to watch.
All right. Well, back to the iPhone. Just want to say, I was surprised by how thin it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I really expected something like this to be a little thicker, bulkier. It's actually very sleek.
It's smaller than a PSP.
Is there a difference in thickness between the different sizes of memory?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know, but I do know it wasn't that thick. It was
probably not because it's flash based, so it's just probably a flash card.
Yeah, it wasn't that thick.
I just don't want anything worth $600 strapped in my pocket. You know, just
well, you know, that's fine. I do. You know, it had the internet surfing is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I
just love the fact that the internet surfing is Wi-Fi rather than being dial-up.
Also, one of our listeners got the phone on the first day. He went up onto our forums and said he was posting using the iPhone. I said, prove it. So he took a picture of himself in the mirror with the iPhone camera with the Geeks On website loaded up. So if you guys want to check that out, go to our forums.
That's
pretty
awesome.
Cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool. First day.
Well, here's a couple of just little tiny things about the iPhone. They expected to sell – their original estimate was that if they sold 500,000 of them – in their first year, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
They have already sold 500,000 of them. They're now expecting to sell up to 10 million.
Yeah, 10 million. Year. They were saying by this time, 2008, I think they will sell that out.
Yeah.
Really?
Worldwide, they're going to sell down on that.
Well, they're not really selling worldwide yet.
Or 2008 this time.
You're probably right. You're probably right. Yeah. The second thing is the iPhone has a really cool system of listening to your voice messages in the sense that
that's one of the things that absolutely sold me on.
Well, out of their different technologies that they have, the first is that when you want to listen to your messages, you don't have to dial in anything. You just hit a button. You see who all your callers are, and you can pick the caller in the order that you want to listen to. It might be the most recent call you've gotten, which would typically be the last one you hear, but that's the one you listen to. The second thing is when you want to merge phone calls. Like, say you're on your phone, someone else calls in, you go, let's do a conference call with these people. You can conference them in. When you decide that you want to get the person off, it's really easy to just click a button and just take the person right off. Like, most of the time when I'm doing calls with my phone and we bring different people onto the phone, I have to hang up and call back to the person I originally started the conference.
And it is Bluetooth accessible as well, isn't it?
Yep.
Wow.
Yes, it is. The last thing that's very interesting is that, when you go to buy a cell phone, it's a real pain in the ass because you got to talk about the plan when you're in there and they pressure you to get these different plans and all these different things. Well, with the iPhone, basically what you do is you buy your phone, you go home, you sign on to iTunes, and then you spend your time browsing the plan and looking at it, and you pick the one that you decide you want that way, no pressure. And it's basically the same cost as any other plan they've got except for $20 extra for the internet.
Wow. If you want that.
You have to have it with an iPhone because that's the whole
purpose. You can use Wi-Fi only if you want to.
I suppose you might, but I don't think they'd give you that option. I'm not sure though.
Mm. Weird. So, all right. Bye. Cool.
Excellent, Mente.
All right.
I listened to something fascinating this week. A brand new podcast called Geeklings On.
No, it's
our listeners, right?
I can't believe none of you have listened to this.
I have
I've listened to all three of them.
You have,
yeah. No.
I found it charming.
Oh yeah, and we need to contact them so we can post those files directly?
I believe we already have permission to post them.
Okay.
Some of our listeners have gotten together and made their own tribute episodes to Geeks On called Geeklings On.
That's great.
And they are charming, they are funny, and these people are going to put us out of business very soon.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they picked certain topics, some which we don't cover because we
don't have the know-how.
Don't have the know-how on those subjects, and so they cover those subjects. I think one of them was Nintendo, although they
fanfic, a Nintendo episode.
Yeah, they thought we were Nintendo haters.
I have a Wii.
We have a Wii. In fact, three of the four of us have Wiis.
Yeah, but I have them at work.
So, you know, we're not haters.
What are you talking about, hater?
I'm just having an ass full of Mario. I mean, how many freaking years do I have to have a Mario damn golf
I want
game?
My lightsaber game.
So do I.
That's all I'm asking for.
By the way, as long
I thought
as
you and Mario were just friends.
No.
As long as we're bringing up the Wii, I just finished Twilight Princess, Legend of Zelda.
Oh, you finished it?
Yeah, I was sick for a week, so I just played through the whole
thing. That's why you didn't come to my bachelor party.
No, I didn't come to your bachelor party because I was sick.
Twilight Princess.
Can I borrow Twilight Princess then?
I actually only rented it.
No, awkward pause.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Twilight thank Princess. You so much to our kind listeners who put together those podcasts for us. They were fun. They were brilliant. And we will be putting them up on our website.
Yeah.
And thank you. A special, special thank you to Brian in Munich from the forums who did all the editing. He played the Aaron/Matt on that episode.
Yeah.
Did he do it from Munich?
Why, yes.
I'm sure he did.
Wow. They did this. They did it all over Skype.
Yeah.
Wow.
It sounds like
they're cooler than we are.
Sounds pretty good with actually, it sounds pretty good. The quality is pretty good for Skype. I mean, I think they're still learning as far as the technical part of getting Skype to work and
just balancing voices is hard. I mean, we've been doing it for years now and we still get off.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So anyway, I hope they do more because I listened to all of them. I thought they were very interesting.
Excellent.
Anyway, that we brought up something in that conversation that I wanted to just jump back to for a quick second, which is having played Twilight Princess.
Mm-hmm.
I got to tell you guys, if you guys haven't played it yet, it really is amazing what the controllers on the Wii can do in terms of how you play and how intuitive it is to use these things. I mean, just it's bizarre how you can shake different things in different ways and by hitting different combinations of buttons, and it's such a neat way of sword fighting and doing different moves in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I was really impressed. And throughout the game, they use the pointer as well. Like, you know, you shoot things, you know, throughout the whole game. You know, it was really intuitive.
They can just come out with more games that are brilliant that way. I'm still playing tennis over and over and again.
Kat's actually really excited by the new Harry Potter game, which is coming out for the Wii, where you play Harry Potter and you actually can use the stick as a wand. And you can have different wand movements that you have to do in order to cast the right spells.
Well, yeah, that's cool.
What would be great is if they could figure out some way of using... Because the game has many little mini games inside it, and one of the mini games is that you fly a creature and you fly it by where you point your controller. So in Harry Potter, it would be very fun if you could fly your broom the same way.
I don't know.
I've been trying to get my hands on Resident Evil 4 for the Wii because I hear that's the version to get.
Yeah.
And it's sold out everywhere. I mean, I cannot find a damn copy of that game.
I'm trying to get one for our office. We haven't been able to find it.
Yeah, so anyway, I'm hoping that's going to be the Wii game that I have because right now, Wii Sports is still kind of the only game that's worth
playing.
I
played through Rayman. That was cool.
I got to say, I enjoyed Big Brain Academy for the Wii. It's very different from the DS. It's very different.
Yeah.
Not even vaguely the same ballpark.
Did it make your brain better?
SSX for the Wii was fun.
I heard that was not that great.
No, I only played about 5 minutes, but I had a good time with it.
Excellent.
Alrighty.
And finally, I am going to be one of the lead voices on Mercenaries 3.
Yay!
So, check it out.
I'm actually looking forward to that because that's co-op.
Yeah.
If it's like the second one with co-op, it's going to be a blast.
Yep.
Literally. Because, the last game, you just drove around, you just blew the shit out of everything.
Yeah,
and you went from it's like Grand Theft Auto in North Korea, you just went anywhere. And I think now it's in where does it take place now? It's like some
you'll see.
Jungles.
I can't tell you.
Yeah, I know where it is. But anyway, it looks interesting. So hopefully, it's just as fun.
It will be.
it will be.
There's some really cool stuff that's coming along with
all
it.
Alrighty.
We'll see.
Anyway.
Cool.
Let's do some news.
News.
Cue the music.
Wow.
That's hot.
All right. Actually, before we start the news, here's some news about us and Geeks On. We are going to Comic-Con. So, anybody else who's going to Comic-Con and would like to get together, we're going to have a Comic-Con meet and greet at the same place we were at last year. Okay? And last year, we were at the Yard House Lounge, and we're going to be there July 28th. That's the Saturday in the evening at 8 p.m. The location is 1023 4th Avenue in San Diego. And I'll post. We'll also post this in our show notes.
Yep.
Online, if you need to go to our website.
Come on down. We'll be downstairs. Aaron will be the one with the martini. I'll be the one with the frou-frou girly drink.
This is a drinking place.
Yes.
So keep in mind, if you are under 21, let us know you'll be there. We'd love to get together with you at some point, but you know we got to find somewhere with seating area for everybody.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I meet people for lunch, and you know I'm there to hang out, have fun, go see you know crazy things at Comic-Con, but also meet people, and you know so yeah, give us a shout out, and we'll meet up. So anyway, we'll put this on our website again, the Yard House at 8 p.m. on the 28th, July 28th. Okay,
excellent.
Woo.
Donnie, hit the news.
A Nepalese living goddess has been fired.
What?
Yes,
a Nepalese living goddess.
A living goddess. A 10-year-old A 10-year-old Nepali girl worshipped as a living goddess, or Kumari, has lost her divine status for defying tradition and visiting the United States. Apparently, it's not allowed for her to travel around without the approval of a council of elders that oversee her. So the...
It's like Footloose.
She's been a goddess for 8 years of the ancient town of Bhaktapur, near the capital Kathmandu, where she was revered by Hindus and Buddhists alike in deeply religious Nepal.
Now, wait a minute. You go from goddess to human because a group of people in a star chamber decide you're not a god anymore?
Well, more importantly,
I mean, you're a god!
No, clearly it's not because of that. Clearly it's because she came to the United States and was defiled.
Well,
I mean, you know.
Well, according to this, living goddesses are chosen from the Buddhist Shakya family after a tough selection process. They are required to stay in temples blessing devotees until puberty, after which they rejoin their family and lead a normal life.
This is called deity idol.
So they don't stay goddesses. They
until they come of puberty.
I did not like the loaves to fishes. It was not very good. I find your commitment lacking.
Is that a...
That was the most awful resurrection I've ever seen.
It's deity idol.
God. Where's the cricket sound effect?
I'll find it.
Your Sermon on the Mount was a little pitchy, dog.
Dog.
Never use that term again. Oh, goodness.
Yep. So just one thing I found very interesting. While other living goddesses get a monthly pension of $17 after each retirement... Kathmandu's gets about $50 a month.
Wow.
So she was kind of the big goddess.
She was. You know?
Doesn't, you know, being a god doesn't sound too good there.
At least not in Kathmandu.
You know, you think you get more than $17 a month for, you know, being a goddess.
Yeah.
Former goddess.
She should go talk to the Scientologists.
Well, how many other gods get a pension at all? Come on.
True.
Yeah.
True. Well, I don't know. Eternal life is a pretty good pension.
Yeah, but how are you going to pay for it? Come on.
I think the Christian church is getting a pretty good pension. It's, you know,
who wants
tithing.
To live I don't know. I've heard stories forever. About St. Peter peeling off bits of pearl to hawk on the side.
All right. Microsoft extends their 360 warranty to 3 years. Okay.
Yes.
I was about ready to rage on this episode because you were having problems with...
My Xbox crapped out on four different games.
Okay.
And basically they would say, you know, can't read the disc, you know, eject it. And like this happened in Oblivion 10 times.
Yeah.
At which point I lost my shit because not only was the game annoying me, but the game was annoying me. The game system was annoying me. So,
well, Our friend Lisa has had that problem.
Oh, really?
Okay. She had to return hers. A guy that I work with had to return. I mean, that's bad.
It's rife.
Okay, yeah. So I was going to rage because I was thinking, you know, Microsoft needs to step up and do, you know.
Do something about it.
Do something. Well, they apparently did. They did. They have extended their the 360 warranty to 3 years. So you just need to contact them. They send you this box. You take off your hard drive. You put the thing in the box. And then they send you a new one back.
I've heard that it's costing them a ton of money, too, actually.
Yeah, $1.15 billion.
Well, that's that's an estimate by one of these investor guys.
Yeah.
He says it could get up to $1.5 billion. We'll see, you know, what really happens. But, you know, I mean, Microsoft screwed up. They were shipping products that don't work. Well, I mean, I'm sorry.
In the news article
I heard
about
PS3
this.
Was doing that, too. And their expected cost for doing that was going to be about $824.36.
Nice.
Sales have been that good.
Nice. You're
no,
funny.
I actually heard that the PS3 rate is like down to like 3%, and Xbox is they're kind of estimating at 33% failure rate.
Wow,
that's
wow.
not good.
No, not at all. What did they say? They said the setback may hinder Microsoft, the world's biggest software maker, as it strives to catch up with Nintendo's Wii, which has outsold the Xbox every month since going on sale in November.
Yeah.
So
this is the letter from Peter Moore. You've spoken. We have heard you. Good service and good customer experience are areas of our business that we care deeply about. And frankly, we're not doing a good enough job. Some of you have expressed frustration with the customer experience and you've had with the Xbox 360. Frustration with having to return your console for service after receiving the general hardware error message for the console. He goes on and says,
It's the red light of death.
Yes. Ooh. Anyway, I'm at least happy that they're responding and doing something about it.
Yep.
Not happy that it's breaking, but...
$1.1 billion.
All right.
I think they're getting a pretty good... Their stock dropped 3 cents. And they're worried.
Okay, so consumers.com heard a rumor that when you bring your computer into places like the Geek Squad, that they were stealing porn off of people's computers. So they decided to create, you know, like a little honeypot. They took their computer and they put a racy picture on the...
I like how you use the term honeypot.
I mean, they marked it with some special...
Well, what they did was they put a racy picture as the opening screen, whatever you call it, your background picture. And they put some files that were on the desktop that looked, you know, some folders that looked intriguing.
Assmaster 6.
Yeah. So then what they did was they brought it to, you know, 12 different Geek Squad places, and they just said, would you please install iTunes? And they had it set up so it would record whatever these people did. And one of the guys definitely came on and copied the stuff over to his little...
iPod, USB.
USB
thing. Yeah.
And, you know, so what they're basically saying is that, you know, it's entirely likely whenever you bring your computer in to get it serviced somewhere, it's entirely likely that people are going through your private material. Now, porn, I'll say I could see where this could be a big problem, especially if people are making some homemade stuff, you know, that might somehow wind up on the internet, which would be a bad thing. But also, if they're rifling through your computer for something like this, it's entirely likely they could be rifling through it for other stuff.
Yeah,
like
they're getting
financial.
Your plugins, your computer programs that you paid for and registered, and if they start using it, you could totally get
hell, getting your freaking credit card numbers.
Credit card numbers, financial data. So, you know, it's really something to think about when you bring your computer to get it fixed, what you're giving someone access to.
Yeah.
You know, like bank account numbers, all sorts of stuff. And it's just something to think about. It's really, you know, and you can see this. we'll link to this article, which also has a video of the guy doing it. You can see what...
Oh, fun.
It's not actually the person doing it.
He's
you can
fired.
See what he's choosing. Oh, yeah, he's definitely fired. You know, I'm sure he's going to be
Why
fired.
Steal porn? It's so free on the internet. Come on, people.
There's free porn on the internet?
Oh, come on. Let's not get into this again.
Okay, so Google is watching you. This is actually old news, but Google, the world's biggest search engine, is setting out to create the most comprehensive database of personal information ever assembled. It's one with the ability to tell people how to run their lives, basically. In a mission statement that raises the specter of an internet big brother to rival Orwellian visions of the state, Google has revealed details of how it intends to organize and control the world's information. The company's chief executive, Eric Schmidt, said during a visit to Britain, the goal is to enable Google users to be able to ask the questions such as, what shall I do tomorrow? And what job shall I take? and Google will provide the answer for you. Google's declaration of intent was publicized at the same time it emerged that the company had also invested $2 million in a human genetics firm called 23andMe. The combination of genetic and internet profiling could prove a powerful tool in the battle for the greater understanding of the behavior of an online service user. Earlier this year, Google's competitor Yahoo has unveiled its own search technology, but the concern has been reinforced by Google's $3.1 billion bid for DoubleClick, a company that helps build a detailed picture of someone's behavior by combining its records of web searches with the information from DoubleClick's cookies, the software placed on users' machines to track which sites they visit. So they're trying to track us like crazy.
Hmm.
So a lot of people have been complaining about it and saying Google's getting too far up into our lives, but...
Am I misunderstanding? I mean, it doesn't sound like they're tracking. It sounds like they're trying to anticipate your needs and offer a service if you want it.
Well, by tracking you.
By tracking you.
Well,
that's what DoubleClick does.
The only issue is you should be able to opt out in some way.
Yeah, as long as you can opt out, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
If that's a service you want, if you want a impersonal computer service to run your life... More power to you.
Yeah, seriously, it's like
that is almost exactly what their response was. Yeah,
you're in college and you go, what major should I have? And you need someone to tell you what major to take. I mean, here it is. It'll tell you.
I mean, the problem
is you're dating
is
a girl.
That,
which girl, I mean, do
who
I marry?
Hasn't wanted to go.
Google will tell you which girl.
What
to
should
marry.
I have for dinner? You know,
the problem is that when you start adding up all of these little conveniences in a format like the internet, where they can all be gathered,
yes,
is that when you then it can be used in other ways if someone decides they want to.
Exactly, which brings up this point, which is
aren't
privacy.
Aren't you the one who made fun of me when I brought up the national database about a year ago?
No.
No?
I don't like that.
Oh, okay, never mind.
But privacy protection experts have argued that the law enforcement agents in certain circumstances can compel search engines and internet service providers to surrender information. One said, the danger here is that it doesn't matter what search engines say their policy is because it can be overridden by national laws.
Yeah.
So that's
or you don't
big,
have to.
Well,
or
but if you opt out, then they can't collect your information.
Absolutely.
Or if you have, yeah, but a lot of these people just don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
You know. So if you have these, these freedom acts that mm-hmm. allows you to snoop and find out that you rented a book about terrorists because you're writing a script and now you're on a fucking list.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? That's bullshit.
Well, I'm saying if you don't opt out of the program...
You didn't do the finger.
Or you didn't sign up. If you didn't sign up for the program, they're not going to be able to get that info.
Right, right. That depends on if you're signing up or if it's you're opting out.
Yeah, but if you're like, these are all the options that I can get by signing up. Google provides this information and that information. And, you know, they make it enticing.
Yeah.
And then suddenly your information's out there. But that's always been the internet's issue.
All right.
I don't see that as being terribly different from... Anyway, Chimera... have the right to life.
Oh, they do. Do they?
Yes, they do.
They still have the right to turn people to stone.
Human animal hybrid embryos, conceived in the laboratory, so-called chimeras, should be regarded as human, and their mother should be allowed to give birth to them. The Roman Catholic Church said yesterday.
Wait. Human animal hybrids.
Yes.
Human animal
Who's
hybrids.
Who's making these?
So, there are a couple of European companies that are
and American ones.
What?
Yep.
Yeah. Under draft government legislation to be debated by Parliament later this year, this is a British story. Scientists will be given permission for the first time to create such embryos for research as long as they destroy them within 2 weeks.
I'm not
okay.
an animal.
So they haven't, publicly made them yet.
I'm not an
animal. They haven't done it with government money yet.
Okay.
I'm a free man.
But the Catholic bishops of England and Wales, in a submission to the Parliamentary Joyce Committee scrutinizing the draft legislation, said the genetic mothers of chimeras should be able to raise them as their own children if they wished.
Dr. Moreau, paging Dr. Moreau.
This is leading to some weird, freaky shit.
See, but I think, if I was a kind of a Roman Catholic right-to-lifer, I think you get kind of stuck in a rock and a hard place here. Right, because they've never gone out ahead against in vitro fertilization, that I know of.
Right,
right. So that's not against the doctrine.
I bet you they'd go up against in vitro fertilization in lions of human DNA into a lion.
Well,
I would think they would be more against just the act of combining animal with humans.
Yeah,
why aren't they like raising hell on that more than what happens after that?
Well, I mean, if creating life in that manner. In vitro fertilization is not against God, right? Then if God's okay with that, It's just another small step to saying
no,
creation of life.
No, it's a huge step to saying, hey, let's get a baby, a human baby to try to be, you know, conceived that's supposed to be, that's a natural thing. And,
if
that,
it works.
And saying, let's combine, let's make Lion-O.
If it works, it's God's will. If the, those genes
no.
couldn't mix.
No
when
way.
Has ever the church said, if it works, it's God's will?
Well.
Anywhere. Anywhere. I would like to anywhere somebody say that.
If God didn't want it to work, it wouldn't work.
Oh, yeah. That's a big church line. If God didn't want it to work, it wouldn't work.
I'm just saying.
Centaurs are us. That's what I'm advertising.
I think they're stuck in a rock and a hard place because the only other option is to say, yes, you can abort them, which we know they ain't down with. You know?
This is just waiting for a script to be written.
It's already been written like 19 times.
That the other option would be say, don't do it in the first place.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Right, and I understand you saying that, but the possibility is there, the know-how is there, and they're already doing in vitro. You know?
Oh, boy. The shit's going to hit the fan. We are going to see some freaky-ass shit.
In our lifetime?
Yeah.
In our lifetime?
Hell yeah.
I mean, all of these things are tiny little steps. I'm just saying, precedent is everything.
Well, that'll come up.
Like, right now they're talking about making it so that if you kill a pregnant woman, mm-hmm. you'll be charged with two murders.
Right? Right, and that's already in this weird dispute because...
Exactly, because that's one tiny step towards abortion becoming illegal.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Because then, you know, if it's all matter of degrees.
Yeah.
I have only one thing to say, and that is Mansquito.
Mansquito!
In our lifetime.
We're going to see some freaky shit in our lifetime. Yeah. I
want a tail.
I don't want you to have a tail.
I want a prehensile tail.
Have you seen my piercings?
I really don't want
Have you
want
seen
you
my
have
tail?
Have
Look
you
at
seen my
claws.
Pierced tail?
I have six nipples.
All right.
That does.
I have four nipples. What are you talking about?
See? It's a very small Chimera! Step.
Chimera! Chimera! Ban the witch!
You guys are grossing me out. HDVD unleashes web-based capabilities. I assume that Blu-ray will eventually do this, but apparently June 26th, the launch of a anime title, Freedom, they had in the menu system the ability to access the internet and download content and watch it directly from your HD DVD, which is very cool because you can update the content and have you know it expand it as you go. But also... Business Week reports that the HD DVD version of the 300 will allow users to recreate the movie, selecting and ordering the scenes as they see fit, like re-editing it, and upload their edit to servers hosted by Warner Brothers. And then others can then watch the new version of the movie that you edited online.
Wow.
And download... Oh, no, they'll be able to download it into their players and watch the new form. So you'll be able to use your HD DVD player to go find new versions of the 300 and then watch it in a reorder.
So it will no longer be the necessary step between gay porn and a good bad recruiting film?
You can cut out anything that you think is gay of the 300, which
is
all my
there
gay friends
gay
is
in
the whole,
300?
Oh, I have a friend who thinks the whole movie is some homoerotic thing. I go, just because a guy doesn't have a shirt on does not make it a gay movie. I'm sorry.
But if a girl doesn't have a shirt on, it...
That's a different thing. It doesn't make it a gay, doesn't make it a gay movie either.
Maybe
you're right.
All it makes it sleeping with each other? Just saying.
Anyway, that sounds pretty cool.
All right. Peter,
so,
what you got?
Ooh, we could make the gay movie version. 300 inches.
But I'm Okay, so you would think that with the iPhone coming out that you would be a bad week to bring out a new product competing against it, but it looks like they have a new product that is coming out. It's called the T-Mobile Hotspot at Home. And basically...
good name.
Yeah. Really, flows off your tongue.
Oh my God, you have the T-Mobile Hotspot at Home? Awesome.
Yeah. Well, basically, here's how it works, though.
T-M-H-S-A-H? Yeah. What is that? No.
T-M-H-H.
Moving on.
All right, moving on. Anyway, basically, you pay $10 more. You get a special router at home. And the way this phone works is it's a normal phone when you're out and about, but when you get within signal of the router, suddenly it becomes a Wi-Fi phone, and all your calls are free.
Lame. You mean you have to have a special router to do it?
You get a special router for your house to do it.
Lame.
Also, anytime you're near a T-Mobile router, you can do it. You can use it as well.
Lame. So, sorry, it needs to be connect to any Wi-Fi system.
I think it connects to other Wi-Fi systems as long as they don't have a sign-in page on the front.
Okay, I could see that. Like if it's an open one, it will automatically connect?
I think it will automatically connect. Okay. As long as
it's open. That makes it better because if you have to sit there and stand 10 feet away from your stupid, I mean, you might as well just have a cord connected to it.
Well, you know, but it is a neat idea, and one of the cool things about it is, you know, how sometimes when you go home, you get bad service in some areas, your cell phone works all over the city, but the minute you walk through your door, it doesn't work.
Yes, that's actually always
would fix that issue. You would have good service inside your
house.
The
other thing is, you could just get rid of your home phone if that ended up working well. Because then you wouldn't be paying for your cellular because you'd just be moving through the internet.
Although I can't help but feel like the home phone is just a good thing to keep around no matter what anyway as a backup system.
Although I've been getting all these like new faxes, spam faxes on through my home phone that have been like...
Put yourself on a do not call list.
I am on the do not call list.
You sue the hell out of
me. Get rid of your fax machine for God's sake. Do you have a telegraph machine too?
Yeah, I've called you and gotten fax machines.
I'm an actor. I need to be able to...
They still do that?
Yes.
Most of the time you can get it on the internet these days.
Yeah.
But listen, you can actually make money off of them. Because you're on the do not call list. I think it's like $2,000 an incident. So
really?
Yeah.
So
casting new film. Stop.
Exactly. Mapping the internet. They're routing traffic through peer-to-peer networks could stave off internet congestion, according to a new study. The increased use of peer-to-peer communication could improve the overall capacity of the internet and make it run much more smoothly. That's the conclusion of a novel study mapping the structure of the internet. Now, I looked at this initially because of the pretty pictures, but what it had was literally a map of what the internet looks like with the closest hubs and stuff like that. So it was really interesting. But basically, they said, take away the core. And an interesting thing happens. About 30% of the nodes from the outer shell become completely cut off. But the remaining 70% can continue communicating because the middle region has enough peer-connected nodes to bypass the core. It's actually easier to see when you see the model of it because it looks like a gigantic globe of the Earth. With a core connected, any node is able to communicate with any other node within about 4 links. If the core is removed, it takes about 7 or 8 links. It's a slower trip, but the data still gets there. It can improve the efficiency of the internet because the core would be less congested if they use the peer-to-peer networks. Hmm. So they've tried to do it with a few dozen large computers to sort of shunt information in different ways. But now they're really going to try to shift it so that more connections are through peer-to-peer networks. People fear that it might actually create more congestion in the long run, but it actually might speed up our connections in the short run.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yep.
I just want my fiber optic cable to my house. They're building it in here in Los Angeles.
I just want my fiber optic cable directly into my brain.
They've got easy access through the front tooth right now.
Yeah. All right, are we done with news?
Done with news.
Done with news.
Excellent.
Our topic.
So, today's topic is sci-fi role-playing games.
Woohoo!
Space operas and role-playing. Futuristic role-playing. What appeals to you about sci-fi genre as a role-playing genre? Is there enough diversity in it?
Problems in sci-fi.
Problems in sci-fi.
I find there are
strengths of sci-fi. Major genres and major games that you can try. All that sort of fun stuff.
All in 5 minutes.
Right, exactly. And go.
I drank a Fresca far too fast. Pardon me. So I think all 4 of us here are sort of old school gamers, except for Peter. I don't think you were a gamer when you were a kid.
No, I played games.
Okay. So I have a feeling most of us started with the early TSR stuff.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. My earliest memories of sci-fi gaming came in the form of Star Frontiers, which some of you may remember the Dralistites, a small amoeba-type race that could assume any shape if they were given enough time.
And humanity,
Wasn't
humanity spelled like strange? Like the humans were like kind of humans, but they weren't.
I don't remember.
Humanity spelled with like an I or something.
I remember there was a monkey race of people. But basically it wasn't really based on an established franchise. They came up with their own line of stuff. I don't remember the universe at all, though. Do you?
Yeah, they. It was like huge. It was like the, you know, it was the takes place in the center of the galaxy, and they had this whole. I was trying to. I looked up. I kind of had to jog my memory a bit. Mm-hmm. But the, it says here the basic setting was known as the Frontier Sector, is where all the four those major races were kind of like all kind of embroiled.
I never played this.
You never
played it? TSR's science fiction version of Dungeons and Dragons, essentially. They had two. Yeah. They had that and Gamma World. Now, Star Frontiers, I'll put a link to it. You can download all of the PDFs of all of the books.
Oh, really?
Really?
For free.
That's fun.
At this website. So I'm going to put up the website. Okay. You can download them. Old school game. So, you know.
And an old school approach to sci-fi. The emphasis was less on the concept of technology and star travel than it was on the concept of these different races you could play, you know? So there was like an insect race that were cold and unemotional. There was the passionate monkey race. There were humans. And then there were the amoeba people. You know, and that's what I remember the emphasis being on.
Well, Why do the monkeys always have to be the passionate ones? Come on.
Have you met a monkey?
Yes.
They're passionate.
They also had this, the void, in which you hyperspaced into the void in order to travel. So there was always that, like, what the void was, and, you know, you could
It's totally stolen from Anne McCaffrey.
When did these come out?
77, 78.
That's after McCaffrey. That's after Perm. You're right.
Yeah.
and then, so then they also had
Gamma World.
Gamma World.
Now, Gamma World, I remember a little better, in that, like, it was in the real world after nuclear war, and you came from these irradiated zones.
Now, isn't this all? This is all like 80s after the bomb. Everybody started doing post-apocalyptic
things.
Specifically to answer the
fact
that
Cold War, so Cold we were war. All like hyped up on the nuclear.
We all sort of believed that the 90s would look like Gamma World,
right?
You know?
Right, and this had all of the. You rolled your character was mutant, so you would roll your superpower and what you mutated into and all that.
And if you weren't a mutant, like the rare people who were not mutants didn't get superpowers, but they got access to old world technology, you know, because the technology would recognize them as being human and obey their commands and things like that.
Ooh.
Now, the funny thing is Gamma World is being remade for the D20 system, and
is
I think
it?
Is available here soon. So,
I hadn't heard that.
Gamma World. And
Don's excited.
How timely.
Now, they're shifting from the Cold War nuclear stuff to the
biotech.
Biotech chemical type of stuff.
Come on.
Not surprised. So, well, that's replaced it.
It
we
really
don't
has.
We don't really fear nuclear war the way we used to.
Well, we also,
we're getting back to it.
We're getting back to it pretty quick.
We also don't believe that like radiation is going to turn you into like a half lizard, half person anymore.
Right.
Well, if Chernobyl's any example, we're all going to be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
We're just going to evolve and adapt to it. Jeez.
Yeah. But nothing will be able to eat us.
Exactly.
Now, I started with Traveler, actually.
Oh, now tell me about Traveler. I'm not familiar with it.
I didn't play Traveler at all.
Traveler, well, when Traveler first started, it was this kind of generic science fiction game. Like, you didn't give you any background. It gave you the mechanics. It was kind of like, you know, a universal game, except for it only was science fiction. And it was, you know, it was one of the first role-playing games besides Dungeons & Dragons. It was Dungeons & Dragons and Traveler, almost, to me. And so they had these little mini books that kept coming out, these little half-page books, and it would say starships and worlds and planets, and it would tell you how to build...
Supplements. Love it.
Yeah, these little mini supplements, and it would tell you how to build worlds. And then they came out with, like, a couple years later, the setting. It was like the Imperium setting. And that's when Traveler started really, I think, taking off, because it built a setting for you, and people didn't have to world build. And they started coming up with planets and pre-made characters and this big background, and then it became like, you know, it started growing from there. I got out of it by then. I just kind of started with Traveler when it was in its basic form.
The first one I ever played was After the Bomb, which was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles offshoot, actually, which I played before Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And you could play anything from dinosaurs to...
Was it a Palladium thing?
Yeah, it was Palladium. To any other animal, and you could combine them with a human, which is now obviously a chimera, into whatever you wanted. So my first character was like this ankylosaur human being that was, I don't know, it was badass.
So Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came in before that.
Before that, I believe.
Okay, so yeah. It was a spinoff, of like the future.
I believe that was a later game then.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It was a little later.
I mean, it was a later game.
I'm going to go back in time a little bit before then.
All right, so you're still doing chronological. Go ahead.
Well, that's fine. I'm just going to throw out I think of them as sort of the four seeds of sci-fi role-playing. You had Gamma World, you had Star Frontiers, you had Traveler.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to throw the fourth one out there as being Paranoia, which is another one that came out
loved Paranoia.
Very early, has mm-hmm. been revived recently.
Yeah.
And it was also, I think, the first comedic role-playing game
yes.
that I ever saw.
I didn't ever play that very much, but I always loved the concept of that.
For those of you who haven't listened to our prior episodes where we've talked about Paranoia, the basic premise is that maybe a nuclear war has broken out. No one really knows. But everyone moved underground to avoid the contamination and the radiation.
The history was always kind of a secret.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But all these underground complexes are ruled over by the computer, and the computer is your friend.
Mm-hmm.
And you must be happy because the computer wants you to be happy. Unhappiness is illegal, and you will be killed if you are unhappy. So everyone is terribly happy all
everything
the time.
Everything is illegal. Like
everything is illegal.
And the world is so filled with red tape and bureaucracy that getting things done is a big pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Like, everything is government-run. Everything.
Isn't that the one where you had a game master who actually made you fill out forms?
You could have bought. You could buy forms, and they were all in triplicate with the little paper, with the, the thing that would transfer to the next thing.
Like,
he would tear out a page, so he's like, well, you don't have the third page of the triplicate. You got to refill. And, of course, while you're filling out the forms, it was in the middle of a gunfight. You know, so you'd have to, if you ran out of bullets, you had to go and like request for ammunition. It was a whole adventure just to get the bullets for your gun.
And there were a large number of reasons why you wanted to make sure everyone else in your party died.
Right.
And everybody had six copies of their character who the computer would be able to unerringly deliver to any location in or around the complex.
So you would die often in the game.
And then a capsule would just come, boom, land on top of your corpse, open up, and the next copy of your character would come out.
Yeah.
And you would make sure...
But you would slowly degrade, right? You weren't quite as good?
I don't remember.
Okay. I do remember, though, the other big thing is finding traitors.
Yeah.
And you never wanted to be accused of being a traitor because the government would just come over and kill you.
Yeah.
But you didn't want to help a traitor. So if you thought other players might be doing something that the computer thought might be traitorous, you would just turn them in, so you would get off the hook.
Yeah. And the twist of the game, of course, was that everybody was a traitor. Everybody belonged to a secret organization and was a mutant, both of which were illegal.
Yeah.
Right. You know? Yes.
And it was hilarious.
Speaking of which, a little off the subject, I just saw Brazil. And I hadn't realized...
For the first time?
Well, I hadn't realized that I hadn't seen the real cut.
The
first time. It was the actual, like, what he chose as his director's cut.
Uh-huh.
And so I finally saw it, and I was like, oh, this is much better than I remembered it to be.
Yeah.
And it is all about triplicate forms, and mm-hmm. I can see how Paranoia kind of came out a little bit out of Brazil.
Yeah. Brazil and Paranoia, I think, comes in hand-to-hand.
Yeah, they're completely
I was
linked.
Thinking about this the other night. Like, the four of these games, to me, Gamma World, Paranoia, Traveler, and I'm blanking...
Star Frontiers.
The four of them, in different ways, kind of gave birth to the rest of the ones that followed.
Mm-hmm.
Either in, like, the massive star empire of Travelers, to the needling dystopia of Gamma World or Paranoia,
mm-hmm.
to just kind of the open, whatever the hell you want to do feeling of Star Frontiers.
Well, I mean, isn't most of it... I mean, it seems to me like there's sort of three different takes on the future that are normally addressed by these type of games.
Okay.
There's the utopian version, mm-hmm. which is Star Trek. Okay.
Right.
They may deal with things that aren't great, but mostly the ship is great. Everything's kind of great and you're exploring. There's the dystopian versions, which are the ones, where the world is
completely blown to crap. Yeah, Blade Runner.
Post-apocalyptic mm-hmm. And then there's like kind of the Wild West take on it, which is neither utopian nor dystopian, but it's about it's about us expanding out into a universe that is much greater than what we could have imagined.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not necessarily great ourselves either.
Was there ever a role-playing game based on Isaac Asimov? Because that's a very Asimov thing of what you were just talking
Traveler
about.
Traveler is very
Oh, really?
Like the foundation and all that stuff.
You really?
Would swear to God that Traveler is based off all that. Traveler takes place 3,000 years in the future.
Yeah, that's yeah. That's
so
all
it's very, very really? Futuristic.
I shall yeah. have to look at.
And I'd put out there that there isn't really a utopian sci-fi role-playing game. You know, normally...
Well, there's Star Trek, but even then it's a little more war-oriented.
Well, this, I mean, I don't remember a Star Trek role-playing game ever being terribly successful.
Well, I thought FaZa's Star Trek role-playing game was very successful. They just got, you know, the license pulled from them.
Right. I've never known anyone to play it.
Oh, know? I used to play FaZa's all the time. It was freaking awesome.
Did that sort of emphasize the utopian aspect of the future, or were you fighting against people who wanted to take your utopia from you?
Well, it was Star Trek. So right. you would, you know, if you played it right, you played it like the episodes where, you know, you... In order for it to be Star Trek, you would take an issue and then implant that into a new planet, if that's the way you were playing. But people okay. expanded it. You know, they had, you know, they had the, if you want to be in the army, that type of stuff. And so you could change Star Trek a little bit. But to me, that's not really Star Trek.
Okay, well, let's keep that then. So utopian, dystopian, and
Wild
West.
West. You know.
You know, and I think that's a good assessment of what we see in the world of role-playing today.
Does Mad Max count as Wild West?
No, that's dystopian.
That's dystopian.
Yeah.
I would lump that with the Gamma World future.
Really?
You know, it's the society has
know.
Collapsed.
It's post-apocalyptic, so yeah. it's dystopian.
Yeah. 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 yeah.
And why do you always wear football gear if it's dystopian?
Well, okay, let's move into the 80s where we start getting cyberpunked.
Right.
Cyberpunked.
Now, of course, there is your all-time favorite your all-time favorite game, Cyberpunk.
With, yes.
Which did well. I mean, there were a lot of supplements and stuff.
Yeah,
for
man.
Cyberpunk.
And they did, Pondsmith and all of those guys had a great game for many, many years. And actually, I didn't realize that they've now become video game creators.
Yeah, well, so did the guys who did own FaZa.
Yeah.
Oh, really? They've all yeah. become, you know. So, I mean, I kind of want to find out what video games they did. I know they did, what's that plane game?
Go to Moby Games.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You could find out which ones they do. Hmm. But yeah, they started doing the plane game that we always used to play on the Xbox.
Crimson Skies.
Crimson Skies is the guy who created Cyberpunk.
Okay, well, Crimson Skies was an old game.
Yeah. Oh, really? Was yeah. it as well? Well, there you go. But yeah, Cyberpunk
was... But
that's
FaZa.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, but I think Cyberpunk knows? Was one of the first to really incorporate the concept of... the web world.
The web world, universe. The net running, the style over substance, I thought was the...
Style over substance.
Was the really, really wonderful concept in Cyberpunk that it was like... It didn't matter how good your Chrome was as long as it looked cool. Mm-hmm. You know, as long... You know, I mean, it was the first one where it's like, no, we're going to create a character that's not just a bard. He's a rocker boy. He sings for a living. That's all he does.
Right.
You know? And I also love the fact that you could create your own character class within Cyberpunk, where it was no longer you're just linked as I'm going to be a fighter, I'm going to be a cleric, I'm going to be, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I can mm-hmm. create whatever I want. I want to be a model.
Right, well, I think that was the middle of the 80s is when people started exploring new ways of game systems,
right?
Which yeah. I think TSR was, I think, the granddaddy of introducing games. You know, they had Boot Hills, yeah. Top Secret. all those games, and but their model was the same. You picked your race, you picked your class, and then you moved on.
And you're leveled. Level.
Well, along those lines, I want to say that even one of the great things that the technological games brought to the game was before then when you created a character, like you said, you basically picked statistics and mm-hmm. skills. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, you know, the money that you had really didn't mean much. It's like, okay, so I can get slightly better armor, you know.
Right.
So
but
I can
now.
Go, you know, Now you could actually
character
buy
character defining.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah. Like you know, the deck you bought, the arm, the cybernetic arm you bought,
and this is where you know, it almost
became an alternate experience system, where money served to upgrade your character as much as experience.
Well, this is where I think that it started to become complicated. I think that technology games starts becoming complicated partly for this reason, is that you need to slow players down from doing these type of things.
Yep.
Okay, everyone's going to roll up a beginning character. I want to be a rich guy. Okay, you can be a rich guy. Well, that means I can get the super duper car.
I'll buy the
super
tank.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then things start spinning out of control.
And bodyguards and a fleet of ninjas.
Yeah, and cybernetics. Suddenly, your starting character can lift cars. Well, wait a minute.
I gotta say that I liked what Shadowrun did with that in some ways, mm-hmm. which was that there was only so much you could do in terms of upgrading your body because you would slowly take away your humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
So it put a limit on what the money could do to you.
Yeah, Cyberpunk was the one that started that with basically you would have a factor after which point you just decided to bludgeon everyone around you and kill them all.
I also want to sort of emphasize something that Matt started on, which was I think Cyberpunk, the 80s was where we started seeing the differentiation in sci-fi role-playing games of character classes. Where I think most of the early ones, it was pretty much like you're a warrior or a tech.
Right.
You know? And that's pretty much it. And then once we saw Shadowrun, we started seeing the concept of the net runner, the net wizard, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of character. The social character being introduced for the first time.
Right.
We mm-hmm. didn't really have a social character class in the earlier types.
Right.
You know?
They also had the, it actually became important to have someone who could drive. I mean, it was, you know. I'm serious.
Just laughing at a game in my head and my friend Scott, who always got to be the driver.
You know, but what type of vehicle you had could be very important, and you could actually mm-hmm. have a character who wasn't just driving from point to point, but might have robots that were in their cars that would come out with them and
yeah.
move around.
Well, I'm going to throw out also. I believe they might have done it more in Traveler, but I remember Shadowrun and Cyberpunk.
Mm-hmm.
being the first ones where they really introduced vehicles as real parts of the team.
Yeah.
You know, where you had to really design those things. And I think
Champions, I think, was one of the... They're the ones that started with the point-based system.
Mm-hmm.
I think they started getting to the vehicle being also a very important part.
Yeah.
And creating it with points, too.
Well, one thing I wanted to bring up at some point was a comparison between sci-fi role-playing and fantasy role-playing,
mm-hmm.
which I think the vehicle is unique to sci-fi role-playing. There is no equivalent to that in fantasy. You get maybe, like, you know, your...
riding steed.
Yeah, your horse, you know, maybe a dragon if you're playing some sort of munchie campaign.
At Uber levels, there is a vehicle comparison. Because when D&D started doing their ship expansions, and you could play pirates and
yeah,
stuff
but
like that.
The ships, yeah,
they
that's
just feel
true.
Kind of not the same.
You know.
Yeah, it really isn't. I mean, a ship, ultimately, like, wow, you've got 12 cannons. Well, I've got 14.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, you know, I'm getting in
my mech warrior and loading up with these cool things. And I've spent the last 3 days tricking out statistically yeah. what, you know, missiles are in my yeah. mech warrior. And that's going to be, I mean, that's way different.
That's one of the things. I was always annoyed with Palladium and the Rift system with the way they did damage in terms of the actual physical character. Mm-hmm. But I always loved the way they did vehicles. Because vehicles, mm-hmm. they were always very specific about its location, about how much armor it had, about mm-hmm. what armor did. And I loved that.
See, I think I'm going to
plus, they had the best pictures.
You know, I think we're getting into sci-fi as being a much more kind of mechanics-heavy gaming than fantasy is
yeah.
in general.
Well, that's when I think we also start seeing really specifically detailed games come out.
Yeah.
Well, like GURPS and Rifts
right.
and even Heroes, mm-hmm. the Hero system, like... I think that also that started peeling away from the war gamer crowd. It's, you know, mm-hmm. calculating the armor on every side of every
right.
part of the power output of the engine you put in your car. And
right.
I mean, you know,
my pinky finger has an armor of 10.
Yeah,
it's true.
I mean, they you know, if you read a GURPS vehicles, you have to have a mathematics degree in order to get through that book.
How many of you guys have GM'd high-tech adventures as opposed to fantasy adventures?
I've done several times.
Okay.
I have not.
You have not?
No.
I've always had a problem with the high-tech adventure because I always feel like, for me, and I have this problem in general, that it spins out of my control a lot quicker.
Yeah.
I have less grasp on it. It's so mechanics-heavy.
Right.
My style of role-playing, mechanics is very tangential to what I do.
Right.
Well, okay.
Maybe. So when you start talking things like vehicles... That's a lot of stats. That's a lot of crunchiness.
Exactly.
I don't feel prepared to really do well.
But you could totally skip all that. What I think the problem that spins out of control is your ability to hold the characters back from the technology.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just going to beam out.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, I'm going to... You can't shoot anybody because It's not like an arrow hitting your shoulder.
Right.
If you get shot by a bad guy, you're eviscerated.
Yeah. So for me, transportation was like transportation and damage were the two things which I was suddenly like.
Well, you were a big Rifts fan.
Yeah.
Right?
If I rolled wrong in Rifts, my character was dead. You know, I just killed off everybody in the group. Period.
Yeah.
That's what I will never forget. Like, it just. The concept of one glancing blow from any gun being able to erase the existence of any physical character that you had.
Yeah. See, this is funny because I remember in someone telling me that in Shadowrun, they had worked up a character who was a troll, who also had body armor, who could literally swallow a grenade and survive it.
I think that was me.
Was that you that said that?
I think that was me.
Yeah.
I was just curious how munchy I could be with this system.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly, I sat down to exploit. I was curious.
But this is where a game master has to be clever about how he's going to...
Yeah.
This is really hard in a Star Trek game, and we should probably move into Star Trek and Star Wars games here in the 80s, because those started really exploding there. But in my Star Trek game, not only is it a science fiction, you have the why don't we just beam out problem and getting shot by a disintegrator gun, is that you need to keep it in a Star Trek flavor, which is not, let's all just go run around like Han Solo, because that's Star Wars. And you have to keep this mindset going, and you know that's hard to do
maintain
if the players are not helping you out.
Right.
You know.
Speaking of which, did you guys ever notice in Star Wars that everyone's got armor on, but they still get shot and they die right away?
That's because they have the same problem as role players do.
Yeah.
It's like
they buy from the same suppliers as the Imperial Stormtroopers.
That's why the Star Wars drinking game is take a drink every time that Stormtrooper armor doesn't work.
Right.
I mean, you can get hit in the head by a rock, by
an Ewok
and you go down.
Yeah.
I'm sure it protects against something. Just not what they think it does.
You know, Star Trek. Listen, you really don't need any sunscreen at all when you're wearing that jacket. It's white.
So Star Trek and Star Wars games is starting from the 80s.
Well, I'm going to actually say, starting from the 80s, but that's when I think we start seeing franchise role-playing come in.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where we start seeing things like Star Frontiers, which was its own universe, and Traveler, which was its own idea, start fading into the background and giving way to role-playing games based on existing series or movies.
And Star Wars, I mean, I was such the uber fan in the 80s. As soon as the Star Wars role-playing game came out, I bought like every book.
Oh, did you?
Oh my god, it was so exciting to me. And then the system was sort of grungy and a little bit hard to use.
I played the system once, one game, and the game was such a disaster that literally that circle of friends and I made fun of the Star Wars role-playing system for easily 10 years.
Very, very...
Let me ask you a question.
Like, you'd punch somebody forever, and you could never really do anything to...
Yeah.
All the damage kind of based
like this,
off of
this guy made
rifles.
A Wookiee, and he was playing with movement rules, as we learned not to do.
Oh, no.
And the combat started over here, and 3 hours later, his Wookiee arrived.
Ugh.
You know, it was just... It was ridiculous.
I've been there. I did that to you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, we remember, Matt.
Yeah, I have to... How does that play? Can you have... characters become Jedis in that?
Yes, you can, but you should really not.
And are they overpowered?
They're overpowering. It's kind of dumb.
It was sort of like the Star Wars Galaxy game. Like, why play anything else if you could be a Jedi?
Yeah.
Don't.
Now, really don't. There's been, like, 3 other versions of Star Wars games since that original
one. Yeah, and now it's
one.
D20. Yeah.
And right, now it's D20. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that fixes any of the problems.
You like the D20 system.
I like the D20 system in that it's simple to understand and easy just to go, go, go.
Right.
Right. You know? Okay. Well, Star Trek had... in fact, I still have all my FASA Star Trek books. I thought they were amazing. In fact, I would consider some of the reference material Star Trek canon because it was so well done.
Didn't you do... Well,
I think that was... Sorry.
Didn't you do some of the game design for the GURPS Star Trek?
Yes. Prime Directive, which is a... there's been several versions of Prime Directive. Prime Directive is a game based off of Starfleet Battles.
Right.
That's the role-playing version of Starfleet Battles. Starfleet Battles is kind of an alternate universe of Star Trek based off the original television series. And when they decided to do a GURPS version a couple years ago, I helped with that book.
Yet another bit of trivia our geeklings did not know.
I was wondering if possibly the success of the franchise role-playing game, as far as sales go, may have actually held back the success of sci-fi and futuristic role-playing versus fantasy. Because if you say, like, I'm going to go play Dungeons & Dragons, people have kind of an idea of what that means, but there's no real concrete picture.
Right.
Whereas if you say, I'm going to go play Star Wars, I think people are kind of going, you're going to go act out scenes from the movie? You're going to do a plot you already know? Like, I don't think people understand that, so there's a...
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm guessing,
I don't know, I haven't any kind of facts on this. I think there may be more of a stigma attached from people who don't know what role-playing is attached to franchise role-playing. Do you think?
I don't know. Dungeons & Dragons is such a hot topic word that just saying that...
It's got such a stigma attached to it.
It's true.
I mean, I think that trumps almost any other... Because if you say...
But I think if somebody said, I'm going to go play Star Wars, I think people might think you're a little bit, like, losing
But they'll
marbles.
Say, oh my God, is that like Dungeons & Dragons?
Yeah.
That's exactly what they say. Rule book that you bring that's not Monopoly, they go, is that like Dungeons & Dragons?
Mm-hmm. That's probably true.
And it's not like advanced Dungeons & Dragons. Come on.
Right. All right, so I'm going to mention this because if I don't, then people will wonder what happened to my brain. GURPS started coming out with their books in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know there is a GURPS book for everything.
Yes.
GURPS Metaphysics.
I have to say the first few times I did play GURPS were in sci-fi settings.
Okay, well, GURPS Space, the original one, I haven't read all the new one, but the original GURPS Space can be used for any role-playing game. I'm telling you, it's freaking amazing because it's not doesn't have GURPS stats. It's
okay,
all
I
want to
play GURPS
stats.
Undersea Adventures. How can it apply?
With GURPS Space?
Yeah. You said I could use it for anything.
You could, I mean, they have pressure rules in there, so if you want to do underwater, they'll tell you exactly what happens.
This is Aaron we're talking
about.
He's
good.
Pressure. They've got world building.
I wish you people could see the shit-eating grin on his face.
Water worlds to volcano worlds, whatever.
They've got, you know, they'll tell you how long your air supply will last.
Yep. All that stuff is in there.
I am undone.
And movement rules in strange environments.
And they have rules for ship design, including land-based, water-based ship design, so you can also do that. So,
look at this.
Done.
Blah, blah, blah. They have GURPS Cyberpunk, which a lot was based off of Cyberpunk.
Completely.
They have GURPS everything, don't they?
True. But the cool thing about GURPS Cyberpunk
Did
is
you
that
not hear our
resistance
advertisement?
Is futile. You will be a
GURPS Cyberpunk was seized by the United States government in a raid, which
that's
was very
right.
cool. Yes, and they got sued back.
Why was this?
Because they thought the game company was making a book on how to hack, which, by the way, I think is still legal to make. They raided they talked to a whole bunch of hackers and stuff to get real world information to put in the book, and so they got put on some watch list. And the U.S. government literally raided Steve Jackson's game studio.
That's
took
pretty funny.
All the computers took all the. In fact, they had to rewrite.
It's amazing
the
what they can do.
Yeah.
Slight tangent. Did I tell you about my stepbrother's porn industry?
Oh yeah,
your stepbrother's what?
My stepbrother works in the porn industry as an editor, and his offices were raided by the government, who not only shot a shotgun into the kitchen floor and into the office below their areas.
Not smart.
But they took all of their computers. And apparently, sorry, slight tangent, it's standard operating procedure right now for them to raid and confiscate computers from porn companies where they know they have no actual legal ability to shut them down. But it takes most of these porn industries are mom and pop businesses.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They don't have the resources to get their stuff back and fight the government on it.
So even though they do eventually get it back, the business is already
the business
out of,
is done.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've already shut down the business because they didn't have the resources.
Well, Steve Jackson had the money, went to court.
Not a mom and pop porn business.
Yeah. Sued them, got their stuff back. Well, not all of it. They had to rewrite some of the book. And I think got money, actually.
Wow.
And they got the government. They got the judge to scold the people who raided it, and they posted that the
apology.
The,
that's awesome.
Apology. So anyway, so that was the GURPS. And I think Heroes has a huge space science fiction.
Does Marvel universes stuff like that count?
We had this discussion last night. Yeah. I don't count. I'm putting
Heroes Unlimited, Villains Unlimited.
I'm putting heroes and that type of stuff in fantasy. Category, not okay. Science fiction category.
Yeah, it seems to be slightly different than the futuristic tech thing we're talking about now.
So tell us, Matt, about Riffs.
Riffs is the best. No, Riffs is just wonderful. I fell in love with it for the story that and the world that it actually created, because for me it was the first time that, me being a munchkin, I could have my magic and eat it too.
This is the ultimate munchkin game.
It is the ultimate munchkin game. You can have magic. You can have
I thought Shadowrun beat them to the punch on that.
They did. No, I think Shadowrun was after Riffs.
Okay.
But Riffs...
But it's the same concept between the two.
But Riffs was about buying the next book in order to make a cooler character.
Yeah, it was like Magic the Gathering, where if you didn't have the newest book, everyone else's character could beat yours.
It was not balanced in any way, shape, or form.
I remember making a really cool farmer character in that, and then somebody else in the party made a half dragon, and someone else made a demigod.
Yeah,
literally.
Yeah,
that was a character class. Demigod.
Demigod is a character class. Yes. God. Yeah, demigod is.
I made
character
a farmer.
Class.
Yeah, like, I have a tinkerer, and you have a. Have a demigod?
Yeah.
Wait a minute here.
Yeah.
And we're both starting characters?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Riffs I loved because the initial concept of it, the first book, was a great post-apocalyptic universe.
Uh-huh.
It was a great idea that, you know, magic came into the world because of a huge nuclear war, and in that nuclear war, millions of people died, and their psychic energy is released, and it reopens the ley lines or dragon lines of the world, and therefore rifts open up, and so stuff crawls through, and you have monsters. And so I love the idea of tanks fighting monsters.
It's not just tanks. It's
power armor.
And so it's you've got... Battletech armor, essentially.
Yes.
Versus dragons.
Yes.
I mean, it's like...
It's fabulous.
Why don't they make a video game based off this shit?
They tried for the N-Gage, and it failed completely.
Well, who the hell would put it on the N-Gage?
Because, there you go. I mean, it would have been brilliant in any other universe.
Let's put it on the next-gen systems. Come on.
If you stick to the first book... Pretty much, you can have a fun time. If you start expanding into a bunch of other books, it's harder.
It spins out of control.
You know. But the thing is, I think they expanded the other books so that game masters would have bigger and bigger obstacles to throw at their higher and higher level characters. But unfortunately, people were like, well, I just want to make an Inlanian Undead Slayer. Why can't I have 8,000 MDC?
Right.
Why not?
Well, now, let me ask you about this.
And I'm fine with that, but they just need to make it clear about...
It's imbalanced.
The game is inherently imbalanced. Like a level, like a point system where you say this character class is worth 1,000 points.
Yeah.
This character class is worth 50 points. So I can't. So I can flip to the book and easily see.
I could make that. I could make that and post that on the internet.
You need to
very
post
easily
that on the internet.
Very easily.
Well, let me ask you about this. Now, this is I have a weird bias towards certain games, in far as labeling goes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, Rifts I label as being sci-fi and futuristic.
Yes.
Right. Despite the fact that it has magic in it.
Mm-hmm.
But now when I look at Shadowrun, which is the game we mentioned that comes slightly after that,
right.
Which is it's a futuristic world very similar to Cyberpunk, where all of a sudden like magic gets reintroduced and transforms a large portion of the population into like
elves,
trolls and
elves, dwarves,
and dwarves and stuff like that.
It's Dungeons & Dragons.
They become shamans and wizards.
Cyberpunk, yeah.
Right. But for some reason, I have a harder time classifying that as sci-fi. For me, that makes the switch over to fantasy, you know, and I'm not sure if it's because you got dragons, you know, but...
You have dragons and riffs.
Am I the only person that thinks that way, or...
I don't know. This is, you know, we can argue what sci-fi and fantasy is all day long, and we'll get that email.
Yeah, we did yesterday.
We'll get that email where we, you know, spent too long arguing over something that we shouldn't argue about.
Yeah.
But you're right. I think there's some gray areas in all these games, and...
But I think Rifts and Shadowrun were the two where they started introducing the concept of... It's sci-fi. We can do whatever the hell we want.
Exactly.
Let's bring back those elements of Dungeons & Dragons that we did like.
Mm-hmm. And it's a great idea. I mean, it's a great idea.
I think so, too.
And everybody should play a Cyber Knight at least once in their life.
Let's talk about some of the different types of storylines that make these types of games intriguing. Like, for example, I mean, if you think about the post-apocalyptic is always a lot of fun. I mean, if you think about The Postman, the David Brin novel, that made such an awful movie, but was a great, great book.
Great concept.
I mean, there's a great deal of fun in the sort of a post-apocalyptic themes about a world trying to redefine itself and the worst aspects of humanity coming out, sometimes because of...
Desperation.
Desperation, but sometimes because
I mean, literally, you know, something about this world has transformed them into monsters.
Well, I specifically wondered whether or not a storyline like that would appeal to geeks, because it's this sort of you're the lone outsider who sees what things, one, used to be like and sees what things could be like. And right. everybody's against you and the world's against you. And I wonder whether or not that's such a correlation to the geek growing up that that's why it becomes so exciting to, one, turn that into a role-playing game, but two, turn it into a movie.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily a geek thing. I think there's a couple about, or at least about the post-apocalyptic or, you know, the crumbling of humanity even in some reason, for some reason, is that a couple things. A, you have this, we lost something that used to be amazing
right.
feel. Two, you have, we have to just survive. There's plenty of stories in just survival.
Yeah, absolutely.
I need to get water today. Or I need to feed my donkey. Or whatever that was the original. Or in, I think, one of the Road Warriors was. He just needs to, like, get his donkey across. Or, but the other one is, what happens when there's a vacuum to fill? There are no governments. So what fills the vacuum of no government? What fills the vacuum of leadership? Who steps forward?
Right,
you know, in the Postman, the movie, a copy repair guy steps forward and becomes a great leader and becomes a bad guy.
And I think that immediately forms three different types of role playing groups. That forms the role playing group that wants to become the new leader, where one of them becomes the new prince of the city, so to speak.
Right,
right. You get the second type of role playing group who isn't so political and so organizationally thinking, who more want to serve an NPC and put them on the throne. So they're going to be a little bit more kind of mission-oriented, going out and achieving certain goals in this new apocalyptic world. And the third one is the destroyer group, who there's
just
something
blow
new.
Shit up.
Yeah, there's something new in power that they want to tear down, or just want to be off on their own, the motorcycle gang, wandering the countryside, avoiding zombies, and taking down whatever they can.
Well, that's the other thing about the post-apocalyptic version is that now you also have a mechanism to introduce the one or two, or I guess if you're going to push it, three absurd things. So, all right, we're in New York City, but now there are mutants, and all the buildings are crumbled. You know, we live in Utah, but there's a zombie horde.
Yeah.
You know, like, what if we're in the same
spot? You're like quoting all the Rift source books right now.
I think my problem with that sort of role playing, the reason why I've never been attracted to it, is there's very little variability in character design that you can put in there. You need a certain degree of survival and militant skill in order to have a viable character.
Well, you know, I think it depends on, though, I mean, most role-playing games are about survival, even if it's political survival or whatever. So it depends on where in that timeline you put it. Let's say you're at the beginning of the timeline. I'm a copy repairman. You're a reporter from some rag magazine, and Matt is a used car salesman. Zombie attacks.
Why am I always the used
car
salesman?
And we're at the end of we're at the end of a zombie attack. So now, yes, it's survival, but I didn't create the warrior guy. I'm the copy guy who has to become the warrior. You're the person who has to, you know what I mean? And I think that becomes interesting.
I think that's a lot of fun.
I would agree, but I would say that most groups will not go in that direction.
Well,
when you say
they will when they hear my voice and they are inspired.
You can do it if you impose it on people, but I think what most people are going to think of is more in terms of the people, 2 years in. The people 3 years.
Well, that's true, but I think that's the same thing with all role-playing games. Most people play Dungeons and Dragons, where everyone picks a different class. You jump into the dungeon and you go raid the dungeon. It's the first. If you're going to be lazy about it, all these genres suck. It's now, I think we're in a time where we've gone through all that stuff. At least as as a more advanced role player, it's like now we're trying to seek.
Would you say you were a level 5 role player?
I would say I'm a level 3 role player. and especially these days, now we haven't gone to some of these new role playing games that
we're going to go on to the modern role playing games.
But we have some of the what Paul Tevis says is the crunchy feely role playing games where people are looking for something different and a role playing system that encourages players to not do exactly what you're saying. It's like this role-playing system makes you think a different way.
Like, one system I was impressed by, let me rephrase. One system that encouraged a degree of role-playing that I was impressed by mm-hmm. was the Amber role-playing system.
Love it.
Where it's a diceless role-playing system where simply if my war skill is higher than yours, I automatically win.
Period.
Any contest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Which forces the person who knows they can't beat you on that level to think more mm-hmm. and to try and figure out other ways to flank you, to not necessarily fight you on a battlefield, but to outmaneuver you in some way.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I enjoyed the watching. I haven't played it, but I watched a few sessions like that.
So let's move on to the other plot points of the utopian, because I have a problem with this category.
Even though you like Star Trek?
And I agree with you that...
Well, I was propelled by the Star Trek game AO as a love for Star Trek, but also mm-hmm. that I think they set a tone for a type of storyline.
Mm-hmm.
But it's difficult as hell. I mean, it's hard to create problems in a world where everyone has no problem.
That's the problem. In a utopian, the only real storylines that I think you can really viably generate in a utopian story mm-hmm. where the world is perfect is defending utopia from an outside threat who wants what you've got or corruption from within.
I would put a third one, which is mm-hmm. the teacher storyline, which is you stumble across a race of people or a planet that has a problem, and you have to be as the teacher and the person who knows better.
That's the Star Trek model.
Utopian, you have to come in and somehow show them the right way to get out.
I would merge that with the Frontier storyline. I would say that's more of a Frontier Wild West situation.
Because
that's what Serenity is.
Well,
yeah, but that's different than being in a utopian world and then coming upon another place and teaching them is different than, you know, we're a Wild West and, you know, it's survival and, you know what I mean? It is a little bit different.
Well, it intersects some of the same types of storylines, its viewpoint is different. I mean, in a dystopian viewpoint, the world is shit. And, mm-hmm. and everything has gone to hell in a handbasket, and technology has been a terrible thing. Okay, in the utopian viewpoint, there is at least a group of people who have found something very close to utopia that works very well. That's
the key to this, I think.
And technology is a good thing. Okay,
mm-hmm. and whoever has more technology is an even better thing.
Is typically a more enlightened race. Okay, but now in the Wild West version. Technology is technology. It's neither good nor bad, and it's about people, and it doesn't have a viewpoint that one culture is better or worse off for technology, and it's more about people just trying to figure things out because everything's still so new because of the intersection of it.
And the other thing, to me, I think the key to the utopian universe is we all know that doesn't exist. And it never will. So when,
it just rings hollow to me.
Right. Well, but the great thing is if that is the that's the scam,
mm-hmm.
is that, yes, we're in the utopian universe, but that's usually only utopia for a certain group of people mm-hmm. and at the cost of something.
Did you see the Star Trek Deep Space Nine episode where they actually brought in the fact that there was like a Unit 23 or an underground... Like,
yeah,
I can't remember which. I think it was Star Trek Deep Space Nine, but it was like the Federation absolutely had a sort of
a black ops
unit that.
Did you also see the Star Trek episode where you found out the entire Federation was being taken over by aliens? All the high ranking officials were being replaced by aliens,
oh, really?
And that it was a secret conspiracy through the entire Federation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and we always learn, and even in Star Trek, that, you know what? They still need to learn a lot of lessons. Yeah. And that's, I think, the important thing about...
Honestly, like, I think, obviously, it's not no surprise since I'm the big fanboy here. Babylon 5, I thought, did a very interesting job with that.
And there is an RPG about it right now.
Yes, there is.
Where they have this race called the Minbari, who present this face to the world of absolute tranquility, absolute peace, and competence. And they can beat the shit out of anyone. But what they finally did in the last season is they reveal that there are three castes of the Minbari, the priests and the warriors, who we've seen through the entire series, and then the worker caste. And the worker caste shows up in the last season like, yeah, this sucks. Our life sucks because of you two castes, right. You know? And I thought that was a nice little touch on that race there.
And I think if I were going to do my own utopian universe is I would start it out where all the heroes are happy as clams in the world, in the utopian world, and then they either find the secret or they get put on the list of, you know, bad guys or whatever it takes to find out the true problems or the price that utopia pays in order to become utopian.
Yeah.
So the basic gist, if you want to run a utopian game, find the flaw in your utopia and jam your characters into it.
Well, I think that is actually very true. Utopian games are harder to run, and yet they're more intelligent if you can get them going.
Yeah.
Oh, or I guess you could say, listen, utopia does exist, and there is a threat that we need to protect it.
Yes.
And just go that route, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is possible. But I still think it would be a deeper game if you, as even if you're doing it that way, you learn that, oh man, we have to do some things that aren't so utopian like in order to keep
it. I sort of like the idea of that utopian pacifist race that suddenly finds itself faced with a war and has to figure out ways to use their wonderful utopian pacifist technology.
There was a really fun,
I think Richard Hatch brought up that subject.
There's a really fun concept in a book I read, and it wasn't a very good book, but the concept was great, which was basically these aliens come to humans, mm-hmm. and they basically say, look, we're in a war right now, and we're way more evolved than you are. And here's the thing, we've evolved out of our fighting instincts, and you guys are really like, you know, the slugs of the universe. But because of that, you're badasses on the combat field. And
so we're going to give you some cool guns. You go fight.
We're going to give you some cool guns. Go fight and save us.
That's fun.
That is
it was really interesting.
That would be a great plot seed for a role-playing game.
Yeah. That's actually really
fun. Because then you get introduced to shit that you shouldn't have.
Oh, yeah. You know,
I just read a fantastic sci-fi novel, which would make a great role-playing game, which starts off with old people, and they're all in their 90s. And basically, when you're 90, you can go off planet and you join the army. Mm-hmm. And you have a choice at 90. You join the army. You don't know what happens, but
because you leave forever.
You leave forever. You're gone. You're never coming back. But what this from when you follow this one character, you find out you go off. You're given a new body. Mm-hmm. You're given a new lease on life. But then you're sent off to war, and you can get blown to crap. And this new body is this amazing, wonderful, you know, jump 40 feet in the air, you know, cat-like reflexes.
You've got the brains of a 90-year-old and a body
in a body of a 24-year-old superhuman.
Here's another obscure pulp novel that I read way back when that I thought would be a good seed, not for a series, like a role-playing genre, but one specific role-playing game. The concept was Earth went to war with this other reptilian alien race. Our enormous armada went off into space to fight them, and then their armada showed up on Earth, and they had destroyed ours. They settled down, and they started to administer Earth, and they run mankind for something like 50 to 100 years before mankind finally rises up and revolts and overthrows them. But the whole real thing is they did horrific things to mankind. They killed off 50% of the population. They stopped us from doing certain, you know, economic things, industrial things. But when we find out, when we overthrow them, is that our military and our government made an agreement with theirs. They would come and they would administer over Earth and do the things that we could never do to ourselves to give ourselves the longevity as a race while we went over to their planet and did the
same
thing.
So. Oh, that's kind of wild.
Yeah. I thought that was an interesting premise.
There was another fun sci-fi novel I read recently where basically this guy is making freezers for the military in case there's ever a big war. There's these big giant underground bunkers with these freezers that he stocked, you know, that when they're done, they'll be stocked with food and all sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, he's down there working on it when the war happens and he's trapped in a freezer and he gets frozen. And he wakes up like, you know, 1,000 years later. And it's utopia. I mean, the world is much smaller. There's many less humans. And every human has a personal robot that looks just like a human that takes care of them. And it's like, you know, it's this really amazing world. And he slowly starts to realize, though, that maybe these robots aren't exactly looking out entirely just for us. Maybe they're the ones that are really running everything. And it's kind of like, you know, he's this guy who's got this very rebellionistic viewpoints, and he's just, you know, shaking everything up.
1,000 years old.
Yeah, and it was interesting.
It would be interesting for character. It would hard to get characters started in that, but then they could be kind of a robot against human type of rebellion thing.
Yeah.
All right, we should move on into other games. There's actually kind of a lull in role-playing.
Role-playing has been on kind of a downturn. I think collectible card games took a big hunk out of it.
Yep.
But I think that role-playing is coming back.
And video games took a huge...
huge hit on the role-playing. I think... like, people who do enjoy role-playing games want to share that passion with people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's hard to bring in new people.
And I have yet to find a good video game role-playing game that allowed me to game master the way I think that it could happen.
Well, and I also think that the concept, what role-playing video games are out there, have colored people's perceptions of what a role-playing game is.
Right.
And for those of you who have played a role-playing video game, but not a tabletop, you have not role-played. It's
right.
It is a different genre entirely.
Mm-hmm.
They share some things in common, but not an awful lot.
Right.
You know.
So, but there were we have Serenity.
Serenity is the big one for me. I think, fun system. It's a good solid little system. It's a little clunky, but it is what it is, and it's not a new system. I'm not going to say I've never seen that system before.
If you use the Savage Worlds system instead of the Serenity system, they're actually close enough that you can literally just take it almost one for one and just go and just scrub out the stuff that you don't like.
Is there a Savage Worlds
futuristic
thing?
I'm sure there is, but it's going to be one of the supplements that.
But I've
got to
say, the Serenity base book provided, even if you haven't seen the Serenity movie or seen the Firefly series, I think it provided enough tone and universe background to give a really solid world to play in.
Yeah.
I thought they did a very good job of that, including on expanding on things they didn't really go into in the series or the movie.
John Wick, mm-hmm. who I think makes very interesting independent little games.
Did Cat.
Lacuna, this is the description. I have not played this. So, sinister secret agents with shadowy employers and mysterious pasts. A bizarre landscape built from 6 billion human minds, arachnid-headed beings that guard a war-torn border zone, and all the worst that mankind has to offer, stalking the alleys and crumbling buildings of a place called Blue City. Anyway, it looked interesting because he had things like heart rate mechanics, like you get your heart rate up and it affects your character. And then there's another one at Callisti Press, which has all sorts of independent role-playing games, and some of them are very inexpensive. I think you can buy the game that I got you, which was
Spirit of the Century,
which seems pretty interesting. This one's called Full Light, Full Steam, and their description was: join the Royal Astronomical Navy and protect the rights and prosperity of the greatest nation on Earth. God save the Queen. It's kind of like a old school... what was that anime series where they had kind of the...
Spaceship Yamato?
Yeah, British Navy in outer space type of thing.
No, not that.
Anyway, it's kind of got that like Royal Navy type of swashbuckling type of thing.
D20, of course, Dungeons & Dragons... Spelljammers came out many years ago. I believe there's a new D20 version of that.
Of course, the new D20 Star Wars.
D20 Star Wars.
There's actually lots of D20 science fiction games.
I know there's the Babylon 5 game out, which I do not have and I have not read, so
that's
I'm
D20?
Not pitching it. I don't think it is. I think it's its own system.
Yeah, Babylon 5 does have one. There was also Living Steel as an older one, but that was kind of a robots take over mech game.
Okay.
If you can find it, Castle Falkenstein is a really interesting game. It's steampunk, but it's still really cool.
You know, the steampunk genre, I think, is very interesting.
Because it is futuristic, and it is actually 2020, but it's all steampunk.
Yeah, it's bizarre. The other thing I'm going to put on our website is there's a whole bunch of user-written role-playing games, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's a couple of goodies or at least some good ideas in there. So I'm going to put a link to a couple of websites where they list and you can download PDFs of free role-playing games.
Mm-hmm.
All science fiction.
Okay.
And some of them have some good settings. A lot of them aren't written very well, but I think you could probably use them as seed ideas for your role-playing games.
So let's throw out some tips there. I'm sorry, were there more?
No, that's it.
Let's throw out some tips for just quick one-liners, how to run a good sci-fi game. I think Aaron already brought up a very good point. Take modern premises, modern problems, and use that as the seed to grow your campaign from. That's the secret to success for sci-fi. It'll be secret of success for your sci-fi game.
Right. It's just a secret of success with storytelling, in my opinion.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, people have need to have a connection to what their problems are.
Well, and I agree with you, but I think that there's different genres. For example, if you, like we were saying, if you're using Utopian, it tends to be much more intellectual, much more... much more about moral issues that are brought on by technology. If you do something that's dystopian, that then often it examines things that are just normal themes from our world in a different context. For example, when we talk about you guys were talking about zombie zombie stories as dystopian, you know, futuristic world where zombies are everywhere. Well, that's that very often the zombie stories, the evil people are other human beings. They're the people that we're really dealing with.
But I would say, you know, cyberpunk is dystopian and can be extremely intellectual.
Yes.
I mean, you could put that on... I can give you a list of 100 cyberpunk stories that are on the top of...
Well, let's try and retract this. We're trying to give tips on success for games right now. My tip for players, get a good picture of the world you're playing in. And then make a character that hooks into at least one portion of that world. You know, you want to make sure that your character has a root in that future world that you can understand and use to get yourself into that world.
Mm-hmm.
You know? May I also suggest this as a general role-playing idea? Is get together with your role-playing group and everybody talk about, including the game master and the players, what you want to play.
Yes.
Because I think that that rarely happens. Is, you know, a game master gets really excited about something in their head and they start, you know, getting something together, and then they try to go find players. And some players are into it, some players aren't, or they, you know, I think that if you have a group of friends who want role playing, sit down and just say, hey, what do you guys want to do?
Yep.
And what type of stories do you want to role-playing in? And then build your science fiction around that, you know? Hmm. And then your players are going to help you out because you're all on board. And that becomes a group storytelling exercise as well, instead of the game master having to do all of that type of work.
Right. Mm-hmm. With science fiction storytelling, I always find one of the best thing to do is ask a question. Mm-hmm. And if you can ask a difficult question like, you know, would I sacrifice 10,000 people to save one?
Sacrifice 10,000 to save another 10,000.
To save another 10,000. You know, if you ask those difficult sort of moral questions, sci-fi allows you the heightened universe to really experiment with those. And so if you can find one that's an overarching one, that you can really get some great adventures out of it.
If another culture is based upon principles that I don't believe in, you know, is it okay for me to try and mess with those principles? And if you're going to handle something like that, handle it really intelligently.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, if your characters start monkeying with someone's culture, you know, don't just have it always be a positive thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Show the problems that come out of that.
Oh, also, get Don on your side early on in the game. Otherwise, he'll derail that sucker so quick.
I think the other thing is, you know, as a game master, make sure that you are clear on the technology and how it can change your story. Because, things like teleporters can ruin a game.
As a game master, never let your players have access to technology you don't understand.
Yeah, exactly. And make, if you want teleporters and guns that when they hit your pinky, they eviscerate the entire being, make sure that there's a way of you controlling it. I mean, Star Trek, they kind of had that problem. So every time, you know, they were in some cloud that some phenomenon makes it so you can't beam down on the planet. Well, you know, that might be the thing that works for you, but just make sure that you can control the technology. Make the batteries, you know, be based off of something that's rare, or, you know, make, you know, you have to bicycle up the transporter.
My suggestion is to base the technology,
gerbil-based technology,
on one element that does not necessarily exist in the real world that gives you some way to control it, like dilithium crystals. player can't argue that dilithium crystals don't work in a, you know, glucose cloud.
Right. And don't use laser guns. Use phasers or particle.
Because then everyone wants to bounce them off of mirrors and
And if you want to say no, you can't bounce a particle sink generator off of a mirror. They can't say, well, why not? You say because it doesn't work in this freaking universe.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, just technology.
Semantics actually are important in role playing games.
Yeah, and again, this technology can. It's almost like magic. When you get into high levels of magic, you can totally derail your game, and it's the exact same way. The difference is all you have to do is go buy a gun.
Yeah.
You don't have to level
up. You don't need to be a 20th level magic user. You can, if you have enough money and you manage to knock over that bank, you're good to go.
Exactly. Absolutely.
I also think that Don made a good point earlier. If you're going to do a dystopian society where we see the end of our world at the beginning of something new happening, it's a really it's a lot of fun to play a character that is not the guy who was the cop and who knew who he has how to use the weapon and was totally prepared for this world. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more fun sometimes to create characters who are like the mechanic and whose skills don't seem
the school teacher,
valuable. Yeah, yeah, you know, the school teacher, the copy repairman, mm-hmm. things that, you know, where you don't see how they're going to be as useful, and yet they get to grow into it.
Yeah.
And their skills are seeds. I mean, you know, really, think about it. A guy who knows how to repair copy machines, you know, he's going to be able to take that skill and apply it to repairing other things, too.
Or, along the same lines, you know, remember, the skills do not make the character. The personality does.
Yeah, too. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, very often, I think a lot of people tend to think of their characters in terms of
stats.
You know, I'm a death knight that nothing can kill.
Ooh, ooh, me. Ooh, 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 ooh.
You know? Build the personality first. Mm-hmm. Let the skills grow from that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What are you talking about?
All right. I think that was a good discussion.
I think so, too.
We anybody do other genres of role-playing?
Well,
I like this. This was pretty good.
We haven't talked about role-playing in a long time. We'll get some feedback from people to help us kind of guide our discussions on role-playing in the future.
Yeah, and please, you know, again, there's so many great role-playing games out there that we haven't played. And get on our forums and find this episode link in our forums and post some other role-playing games that you can buy now, some new ones with different mechanics and stuff, and let us know and everybody else who listens to the show what they can play and what their pros and cons of each one of these are.
And where can they find our forums?
They can find them at www.geekson.com.
And we'll mention that again at the end of the episode after we do our bit.
Let's do our bit.
Excellent.
So despite people saying that they hated this bit before... I like it. So.
People liked this bit.
People liked it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought we got an email saying they thought we weren't funny on this.
No, we're not funny, but that's the point.
True. That is true.
All right. So the bit is...
Geek punchlines.
Geek punchlines. Absolutely.
Got to
come up
mean?
With geek punchlines, two geeky jokes... But we're only giving you the punchline.
Right.
These
are
jokes all you're getting.
Jokes that don't exist, and we're not going to give you the joke. We're only going to give you the punchline of the geek joke.
Yeah, and I apologize. Two of mine are raunchy, but that's all I could come up with.
Start us off, Matt. I only got one.
All right. My first one. So the lesbian vampire says, same time next month?
But I'm bummed. Okay. Okay.
Jeez.
Don, come on.
No.
That's just wrong.
I got one. The iPhone. It's a wireless internet device, a media player, a waffle maker, a crappy a fax machine, a dog walker, and a crappy cell phone. But I'm bummed.
Yeah, okay. Maybe we shouldn't do any more of these. Okay. And the blue meeple exclaimed, "You think you have dating problems? I have to build an entire city to score."
No, that's funny.
Little carcassonne.
That's very funny. I like that. That's funny.
Oh, I didn't know what a meeple was. It took me a while. Okay, well, that is pretty funny.
True.
Right, so my one. So the fairy godmother said, "Wait, why do you want..." Hold on, let's edit that.
Okay.
We're editing that. I'm starting again. So the fairy godmother said, "Wait, Why do you want to go for one when you can have a pair of them? No, wait. Let me redo that again.
Okay.
So the fairy godmother said, wait, why do you want to go to one of those when you've got the pair of them right there?
I don't get it.
Oh, one ball.
One ball.
And why would you have the pair of the balls, though?
She's male.
Because the fairy godmother gave her two.
Yes, the fairy godmother. Get it?
Oh, yes, I see.
It's minor, complicated.
I think mine are as obscure as yours.
I wrote mine 5 minutes beforehand.
All right. Ready? So the porn star says, oh, Kit Fisto.
Next.
Does anybody know that Star Wars character except
yes,
for George Lucas?
He's a Jedi. He's the guy with the Twi'lek hair.
Okay.
So Bumblebee said, roll out, I would, but I'm not more than meets the eye. I'm just a big, shitty American car with crappy gas mileage.
You're in a bad mood.
All right, I'm glad Don liked that.
I like that.
All right, this is another really obscure one that I don't know if anybody's going to get. Ash turns to Kane and says, I use Prevacid for that occasional heartburn I get from long cryogenic space travel.
Okay.
You have to know who Ash and Kane are. If you know that, you'll kind of get the joke.
Is that,
I know.
Isn't that Serenity?
No.
No, it's not. What is it?
It's Alien.
Yes. All right, last one. Anybody else?
No.
Okay. It takes six. One to change it, and five to gank any noobs trying to change it back.
That's so not funny.
That's kind of funny. I like that.
I don't get it. It takes six.
It takes six. Light bulb. One to change it, and five to gank any noobs who are trying to change it back.
God. I like that. No, that's clever.
You got pwned.
No, that's funny.
So that's a wrap.
Oh, I got one more.
Oh,
you do?
I have one more.
Bring it on home.
The math professor frowns at the geek. I'm sorry, explain to me how 6 is greater than 7 of 9? I didn't say it was good. I'm just saying.
You saved it for last. I just kind of assumed.
I know. I should have flip-flopped.
Okay. Well, that's it. You've wasted another almost 2 hours
of your life on this episode of Geeks On.
With the four of us.
You poor soul.
But if you come to San Diego for Comic-Con, stop by and let's have a chat and a drink. And
at the Yard House?
At the Yard House.
At the Yard House.
We'll post that on our website, www.geeksong.com. Or if you want to meet up for lunch or hang out at Comic-Con or something, just
send
give us a call.
Message at Matt, Peter, Don, or Aaron at Geeks On.
Or even just geeks at Geeks On.
That's true. So that's it for us. I hope you guys have a great geek week.
All right.